Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning yet again. I'm Marty Goldenson, in for the vacationing Brian Lehrer. If you work in an office, chances are you have tried and failed to use your work computer for something the IT department doesn't like, such as a personal email, downloading a skateboarding dog video off YouTube, or maybe IMing. Well, it turns out there are ways to get around the irritating obstructions that the IT guys put in your way. Wahine Vara, reporter for the Wall Street Journal, set out to discover techniques for evading IT blocks, and she joins us now, along with Gina Trapani, one of the sources for her story. Gina is the editor of a blog called Lifehacker and the author of the book, Lifehacker 88 Tricks to Turbocharge Your Day. Wahine and Gina, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having us. Good morning. Great to be here.
All right. Forgive me if I have mashed your names. Listeners, but before we go forward, because I want to know about these tricks, a couple I actually already use, and I'll tell you about that in a minute, but we'd love our listeners to join in on this, so please do. I want to ask about this particularly frustrating business of getting around an IT block, or you have some tips or your own techniques, or maybe you're in the IT department and you want to defend what you do for a living. Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692, or leave a comment on our website at WNYC.org and click on the Brian Lehrer Show. So, Wahine, there are reasons that the IT departments put up these blocks in the first place, right? I mean, it's a security risk, no?
Right, absolutely. It can be a security risk. There can also be legal implications that I sort of address in this story that I wrote on this topic. So the security risk is that anytime you're doing something outside of your IT department's supervision, there's a chance that, you know, your PC could be infected, or you could wander onto a site that is sort of doing sneaky things to steal your personal information and so on. There are also risks associated with sending company information outside of the company by doing things like, you know, accessing work email on a personal webmail address, for instance. And there are legal implications there too. So there are regulatory issues involved.
But the fact is, all of that sort of gets washed away or overwhelmed by the fact that we're private people with private lives and we're at work, right?
Right. That's the tension. I mean, I don't know that it necessarily gets washed away by those things, but clearly there's an issue when the IT department has its own list of priorities, valid priorities, and then employees have things that they want to do, sometimes work-related and, you know, sometimes not, since they're spending 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 hours at the office.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to separate your work life entirely and pretend it's not you there and ignore all possibilities of communication.
Exactly.
So what's the thing people want to do most in terms of communication? They want to email, you know, the spouse or what?
You know, in conversations that I've had, the thing that's come up the most is this matter of companies blocking employees from visiting certain websites. And that's a tricky one because technically while you're at work, you're supposed to be working, right? But everyone knows that people aren't always working when they're at work. And so I think years ago in the mid to late 90s, when the internet first came into offices, it was actually much more common for employers to block things like Gmail or other sort of entertainment-oriented or personal communication-oriented websites. And that's those rules have loosened, but there are still companies that do those kinds of things. There are plenty of companies that block YouTube, for instance, and other sites that are sort of known for being entertainment sites. And so in talking to people, that's something that comes up.
Jump in anytime, Gina. How do you get around this? Suppose you want to, you know, watch that skateboarding dog.
Gina, I'll let you get this one since you're the one who offered this tip.
Okay. Well, visiting websites that are blocked at your office, again, you know, this could result in getting fired or, you know, getting a stern talking to you from your manager. So this type of thing you have to sort of balance risk and reward. But you can, as Wahini in her article described, you can use websites as a proxy. For example, Google has a translation service, right? If you encounter a website in a different language, it'll translate it for you. But what you can do to view a blocked website is to put that website through the Google translation service English to English. So in essence, Google is showing you a copy of that web page, not at the originating address that your company is
blocking. Now, slow down for a second. You're going to Google rather than the site you want to read.
Exactly.
And then you're asking Google, in turn, to find that site and translate it, but from English into English.
Exactly.
I get it. And this is a serious... This works pretty well, or do you get that sort of gobbledygook?
It actually works very well. There's another way. In essence, you're using Google as a proxy, which is sort of a middleman between you and the site. And there are other proxy servers that let you fetch web pages for you and show them to you when the proxy isn't blocked. So you're actually seeing them through the proxy, so you can see the pages that way.
The one I always bump into at work is I want to send some audio file or some large file, and I'm not allowed to because it's too big. It'll overwhelm the Works server. How do I get around that?
There are a few free services that let you send large files that your regular email system won't let you send. One included in the article is called YouSendIt. And there are actually quite a few file storage services out there, free ones out on the web, that'll let you do that. But again, you know, the risk is if you're sending a large file that has all your company's secrets into it and uploading it to, you know, a third-party website, that would probably make your IT department upset. And they're your friend, ultimately, most of the time.
Gary's on the line. From Queens, Gary? Are you there? Oh, I'm sorry. I went too fast. Gary. Yeah, Gary, have you run across a problem?
About 7 months ago, I didn't receive an email from a client who I was emailing regularly, and she swore that she sent it. So I went to my ISP's web server and I looked in the spam box, and there it was sitting. So I spoke to the technician at the ISP, and he explained that they receive a blacklist that they apply to filter out certain emails, and her email was on that blacklist. And I said, she doesn't send out spam. And he said, it's very possible that she's sharing an IP address with someone who does spam. And I want to know how prevalent that is and how you can avoid losing an important email like that.
What's fairly common is that a spammer can sort of, in essence, hijack a regular computer user's email address and sort of use that as a way to send spam. You know, that person that you're receiving, you know, that you receive email from often, obviously is someone you work with and deal with and isn't a spammer himself or herself. But if that person's been targeted, that can happen. It's a similar scenario comes up when a website, a reputable website for some, you know, maybe a local retailer gets hijacked. That retailer itself doesn't necessarily have nefarious motives, but if an advertisement on that retailer's website contains some kind of a piece of malware, that can still infect your computer. So I think it's common to assume, you know, I'm visiting this website that I trust, or I'm getting an email from this person that I trust, and so, you know, what could be wrong with it? But you know, there is a risk that you're not actually, you know, that you're getting infected by something that, you know, that person didn't put there.
I would think that, at least for me, the most common thing I want to do is to check my personal email when I'm at work, but I want to keep it private. Gina, is that possible?
Yes, well, it depends on where your personal email is hosted. If you use an online email service like Yahoo Mail or Google's Mail, Gmail, you can just visit the website just in your web browser. One good way to secure it and make sure that other people on your network can't sniff your email that's passing over the wire is to use HTTPS. Put that S at the end of the HTTP, and that means that the transmission is encrypted, which means that if your IT department is kind of spying on the data that's passing between your computer and your webmail's computer, that they wouldn't be able to see, you know, the content of your messages.
By the way, we're not blocking you, so if you want to join in this conversation, give us a call at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-4255. 9692, or leave a comment on our website, and we'll see it up front right here at WNYC.org, and click on the Brian Lehrer Show. This article that from the Wall Street Journal that you wrote, it doesn't cover your work computer. I think it doesn't cover the issue. Maybe I didn't read it carefully, but of wanting to use that work computer they give you that you might be able to take home, the laptop, and use it at home and put some of your own personal stuff on it, and you want that to be sort of safe or cover your tracks, and it's tempting to use that good computer. How do you deal with that?
Right. That's a tricky one. So technically, your work computer is the property of your company, which isn't all that surprising. But what makes it tricky is that people are, you know, often using their work computers at home as sort of a personal computer as well. I sometimes do. I'll admit it. And so, you know, downloading a file sharing program onto your work laptop, or, you know, visiting websites that you typically wouldn't visit at work at home seem more okay, but you're subject to the same sort of IT rules. So, you know, if you're willing to take the risk, again, the risk is that, you know, you face disciplinary action at your company, you get fired at worse. You could infect your laptop because of the activities that you're conducting on that laptop. If you're willing to take all those risks, there are ways to sort of in a cursory, in a superficial way, clear your tracks. There are ways to clear your tracks on the internet. In IE7, you just click on Tools and delete browsing history, and that sort of clears the history of the websites you've been visiting.
Right, and don't download anything, right?
Exactly, right. And then in Firefox, you can hit Control Shift Delete, and that does the same thing. One issue that isn't mentioned in the story, though, is that there's still ways for an IT department to find that information if they're really looking for it.
This just makes
it a little bit harder to do.
Right,
so.
David from Queens, you had a comment.
Yeah. Recently, I tried to log on to MySpace once, and it said that my account was phished. And I heard somewhere that it had to do with something like you type the URL in incorrectly and you get a site that looks like MySpace, and when you type in your name and password, they steal that. Now, if I'm at work and I go to a site like that and I'm giving my information, could my network be, you know, hacked in?
Most likely your account, your MySpace account will be at risk, not necessarily your computer at work, although phishing sites are most likely to be hosting, you know, malware on them. So you definitely, if you get an email with a link to a site like MySpace or PayPal asking you to update your account information, don't click on the link in the email. Type in the address, myspace.com or paypal.com, in order to make sure that you're going to the actual site.
So what's most along the lines of what Gina's saying, what's most typical, I think, with those MySpace phishing attacks is that you must have gotten an email saying, you know, so-and-so wants to add you as a friend on MySpace, and you click on that link that looks like a MySpace link, and actually it's a phishing site. So generally, the problem isn't that you visit MySpace on your own and are clicking around on the site and get this phishing attack. It's that you click on a link the way that you would, you know, click on a link from a fake PayPal or eBay email address.
Peter from Manhattan, are you having trouble downloading YouTube at work?
Yes. When I'm not online at work, I'd like to share with my coworkers some of the YouTube shorts that I've found. And I was wondering if there is any way to actually download that, to have it in my hard drive, as opposed to having to be online or having to send them links to watch individually themselves.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, there isn't a way to do so from YouTube itself, given all the sort of copyright issues involved in allowing people to download videos. So, it's easier for YouTube to if YouTube is accidentally displaying a copyrighted video and gets a takedown notice from a copyright owner saying, you know, hey, that's our property, you can't show it, YouTube will take it down from YouTube. But you know, if you're downloading all these things to your PC, it makes it more difficult. There are websites that allow you to download videos, though, or that allow you to sort of capture a stream, a video stream. So sort of, it's the equivalent maybe of, you know, tape recording, you know, a radio broadcast or something. It's sort of the same idea. So there are services that allow you to do that with, you know, say a YouTube video or another, you know, even music on the web. But they sort of fall in the legal gray area. So it's, you know, encouraging you to use them is sort of like encouraging you to download music from the internet. So it can be sort of tricky. I don't know, Gina, if you have any thoughts.
Well, I was going to say that that is all true, but if you really want to download a video from YouTube, there's a Firefox extension called Video Downloader, which will do it for you. But keep in mind all the kind of risks and warnings there.
I just want to make it clear that WNYC and this program are not promoting the idea of illegal anything, right? But or doing anything that would make your boss angry. But I have a question. You know, a lot of companies do not issue you a BlackBerry, but would be useful to have your work email come in to you from, you know, so you can really stay on top of your work. Is there a way to connect to your own BlackBerry, your work email?
I can offer. I'll offer the IT department version here, which I only mentioned in the story. This is probably the best way to do it. If you're planning to get a personal device, or if you have a personal device and you'd like to access your work email on it, the best way to do it from the perspective of that sort of will make you happy and will make your IT department happy is to go to your IT guy and say, hey, does our system support this device that I just got?
Right. I'm going to have to cut you off because we're running out of time. Go to the Wall Street Journal, find this, and you'll get all 10 of these tips. It's a Wahine Barry's article. Thanks for being on. And Gina Trapina, thanks to you too. From Lifehacker blog.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.